Order. The first 11 chapters of Genesis tell us about events before the flood, like the creation, the fall of man, and marriage. Then we look at the flood of Noah, the scattering of the people at Babel. And then from chapters 12 through 50 of the book of Genesis, we see the lives of four main characters: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Today we'll begin a study of Joseph's life in chapters 37 and 39. Then Johnny will pick up on our study in chapters 40 through 42. What I'd like to do first of all is read part of Stephen's address to the council in Acts chapter 7 to introduce our study. In Acts 7 and verse 2, Stephen said, "Men and brethren, fathers, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he dwelt in Haran, and said unto him, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred, and come to a land that I will show thee. Then came he out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Haran, and from thence, when his father was dead, he removed him into this land, wherein you now dwell. And he gave him none inheritance in it, no, not so much as to set his foot on, yet he promised that he would give it to him for a possession, and to his seed after him, when as yet he had no child. And God spake on this wise, that his seed should sojourn in a strange land, and that should bring them into bondage, and entreat them evil 400 years. And that nation that we understand is Egypt, to whom they shall be in bondage, will I judge, said God. And after that they shall come forth and serve me in this place. And he gave him the covenant of circumcision. So Abraham begat Isaac, and circumcised him the eighth day, and Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat the 12 patriarchs. And here's what I'd like us to concentrate on. This verse 9 summarizes our statement, and summarizes our study this morning. It says in verses 9 and 10, "And the patriarchs, these 12 patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God was with him and delivered him out of all his troubles, out of all his afflictions." The patriarchs moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt, but God was with him and delivered him out of all his afflictions. I took the information for this chart from one of Jeff Smith's slides. I apologize for the lack of clarity on some of the cities. I changed it a little bit and highlighted some of these cities. But Hebron is highlighted on the lower right of the screen, then Shechem above it, then Dothan at the top. These are the cities that we'll see Joseph traveling through from his homeland of Hebron up to Shechem, and then he's redirected to Dothan. But I think this map will give us a rough idea of Joseph's travels in our lesson today as he left his home in the Vale of Hebron. And it's about 50 miles from Hebron to Shechem, and roughly 12 to 15 miles from Shechem to Dothan. And then after Joseph is picked up by the Ishmaelite traders and he's taken to Egypt, it's about 250 to 300 miles from Dothan to Egypt, using the established trade routes. In Genesis 37, Genesis chapter 37, "And Jacob dwelled in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan." Specifically, verse 14 shows us it was in Hebron, the Vale of Hebron, but he was in Canaan. "Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger." That reminds me of Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 9 and verse 13. In Hebrews 11, it tells us that by faith — it's talking about Abraham, it begins by talking about Abraham — by faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country. He was a pilgrim and a stranger in this land, just as it shows us that Jacob was. But at the last part of that, all of these men, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Hey, we're just sojourning here. And that's what this verse shows us, that Jacob was in this land of Canaan, in the Vale of Hebron. He was a stranger in the land, just passing through. But he was in a land that God had promised to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, in verse 2, these are the generations of Jacob. So here's in the life of Jacob, primarily his son Joseph will begin. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah. If you look back to Genesis 35, beginning about verse 23, breaks out the sons of Leah and Rachel and Bilhah and Zilpah. But here it says that he was in the field with the sons of Zilpah and Bilhah. That would be Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. So he was with those four, his father's wives. It's interesting, isn't it? Back in Genesis 32, verse 22, it describes Leah and Rachel as his wives, and then his maidservants, Bilhah and Zilpah. But here, in this text, the Bible says just says his wives, Bilhah and Zilpah. But so Joseph was with Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher in the field, and he brought back their evil report. So I take it that these four boys were doing something they shouldn't have been doing, and Joseph went back to his dad and Jacob and told his dad what was going on. Now, Israel loved Jacob. Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. What I'd like to do in this study is there may be 1,000 sins of choice or problems that we could point out, but what I'd like to do is highlight the brother's choice to hate. His brethren, when they saw that his father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him, and they could not speak peaceably to him. Joseph has a couple of dreams. We'll read about those in just a minute here. He has a couple of dreams, and they cause his brothers to hate him even more. You know, you think about, you might say the brothers had a darkened heart toward Joseph, and their heart became even more dark. Sad, isn't it? Well, Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, "Hear, I pray you, the dream which I've dreamed. And behold, we were binding sheaves in the field. And my sheaf arose and also stood upright, and behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheep." And his brethren said to him, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. On the screen, I have a screenshot of a website that I'd seen. The URL is there to give credit. But I thought it was just a neat picture that may kind of set in our minds what it might have been like, Joseph's dreams might have been like. So he and his brothers were in the field of grain, and they were binding up, you know, harvesting the grain, binding it up in bundles. And so here's Joseph's bundle, stands upright, and Joseph's brothers' bundles, they all bow down to his. And there he is with a coat of many colors. But so he dreamed this dream, and they hated him. You know, I'm reminded in the book of 1 John, 1 John chapter 2, 1 John chapter 2, verses 9 through 11, "He that saith he is in the light and hateth his brother is in darkness even until now. He that loveth his brother abideth in the light, and there is none occasion of stumbling in him. But he that hateth his brother is in darkness and walketh in darkness and knoweth not whither he goeth, because darkness hath blinded his eyes." And then in 1 John 3 and verses 14 and 15, "He that loveth not his brother abideth in death. Whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. And you know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him." Chapter 4, verse 20, "If a man say, I love God, and hates his brother, he's a liar. For if he loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen?" How do you know that you love the Lord? "Oh, no, I love the Lord. No, I don't love my brother. But I know I love the Lord." How do you know that you love the Lord? You've never seen him. If you saw the Lord at any specific point in time, he might be just like the brother you hate. How do you know you love the Lord if you don't even love your brother? So the brothers hated Joseph for his dreams and for in jealousy, envy toward him because of his coat of many colors. Well, he has this dream. He has another dream, verse 9, "And he dreamed yet another dream and told it his brethren and said, Behold, I've dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? I and thy mother..." Maybe he's talking accommodatively there of Leah. I'm not sure. Over in chapter 49, verse 31, Jacob does reference there that he buried Leah. So prior to going to Egypt, Jacob had already buried Leah. But here, I and thy mother, are we going to bow down to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him, and his father observed the saying. He remembered what Joseph said about in these dreams. Remember Acts chapter 7 and verse 9 that we read earlier at the beginning of the study? And the patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God was with him and delivered him out of all his troubles. So here, his brethren envied him, but his father remembered the saying. Well, beginning in verse 12, Jacob, his brothers go and they're feeding the flock, and Jacob wants him to go and check on them, see how they're doing, see how the flock's doing. In verse 12, his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said unto Joseph, "Do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I'll send thee unto them." And he said to him, "Here am I." And he said to him, "Go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren, and well with the flocks, and bring me word again." So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. You remember on our map, so about 50 miles from the vale of Hebron to Shechem, and then about 12 to 15 more to Dothan. So he got to Shechem, and a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, "What seekest thou?" And he said, "I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks." And the man said, "They're departed thence. And I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to slay him. You know, so you might say Satan is about to make a move here, but it's not going to be checkmate, as we'll see. So the brothers, they plot to kill him. Reuben plots to save him. In verse 19, and they say one to another, "Behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit." And we'll say, they're going to tell their dad, "Some evil beast hath devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams." And Reuben heard it, and you can just imagine, you know, here's Joseph coming down the way, and the brothers are conspiring, and Reuben rushes to the front, maybe to in between them to preempt it. And he says, "Come now, let us," or Reuben heard it, and they delivered him out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." And Reuben said unto them, "Shed no blood, but cast him into the pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him." And what he was thinking in the back of his mind was, he's going to rid him out of his hands to deliver him back to his father again. And it came to pass, when Joseph was coming to his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was upon him, and they took him and cast him into the pit. And the pit was empty, and there was no water. Later on in Genesis 42, verse 21, you remember when they go to Egypt, and they're standing before Joseph, and they don't recognize that that's Joseph. I guess Joseph is looking and talking and walking like an Egyptian. They don't recognize it's him, but they're talking, and they say, "You know, we remember the anguish of his soul as he besought us." You know, I don't know whether that was in the pit or whether it was when he was about to be sold to the Ishmaelites or what point in time it was, but, you know, he's beseeching his brothers. They see the anguish of his soul. But yet, then it says in verse 25, chapter 37, they sat down to eat. So you can just imagine the cold heartedness. So they're wanting, and think about it. Sin after sin after sin. You know, they hate him. They can't speak peaceably to him. They're wanting to kill him. They throw him into a pit. And they're sitting down to eat bread. And they lift up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. Remember, again, it's going to be about 250 to 300 miles from Dothan back down to Egypt. But there, the Ishmaelites come. They're bearing these spices. They're headed down to Egypt. And Judah said to his brethren, "You know, what good is it if we kill him and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he's our brother in our flesh. Now let's not kill him, but let's just sell our brother." And his brethren were content. That sounded good to them. Then there passed by Midianite merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. Back in Genesis 16, verse 15, and also chapter 25 and verse 2, we see a couple of wives of Abraham. Here's Hagar, and they bear Ishmael. And then Abraham marries Keturah, and they bear Midian. And so here are these Midianites, the Ishmaelites. I take it that they've banded together, these peoples have an alliance together. But so it describes them in both ways. But they buy Joseph, and they take him down to Egypt. Well, Reuben returns to the pit, and lo and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. And he returned to his brethren and said, "The child is not, and I, whither shall I go? What am I going to do? What am I going to say to my father?" He had planned, you know, to rescue him, deliver him in safety back to his dad. Now what am I going to do? And he returned, and they took Joseph's coat, and killed the kid of the goats, and dipped the blood, One more thing. Back in, they sell Joseph to the Ishmaelites, these Midianites. You remember over in Psalm 105, verses 17 and 18, it describes how that God was going to send a famine on the land, and it says he was going to send somebody ahead to save everyone. So he sent a man before them, even Joseph, who was sold for a servant, whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron. So I don't know maybe exactly in that psalm whether it was with the Ishmaelites, these Midianites, that they hurt his feet in fetters, or whether it was later, as we'll see, when he was thrown in prison. But so that Joseph is sold. He's going down to Egypt. Reuben returns and doesn't know what to do. So they take Joseph's coat, kill the kid of the goats, dipped his coat in blood. And they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, "This we have found. Know now whether it be thy son's coat or no." And he knew it and said, "It is my son's coat. An evil beast hath devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces." Can you imagine the feeling that Jacob had here? Jacob had lost his beloved wife, Rachel, and now his son, the son of his old age, Joseph, that he loves, is dead. Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted and said, "I'll go down to my grave and to my son mourning." You know, just like David said one time, you know, he can't come back, but I'll go to him. I'm going to go to my grave to him mourning. And thus his father wept for him. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt, unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's, and captain of the guard. Any comments here in chapter 37? In chapter 39, Joseph was brought down to Egypt. Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph. Notice these next few verses about, we can see God's hand in this world and God's hand with Joseph. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And the master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. The Lord made it to prosper. The Lord was with Joseph. You remember back in Acts chapter 7, verses 9 and 10, that we looked at earlier in our lesson, the patriarchs moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt, but God was with him and delivered him out of all his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So the Lord was with Joseph. He was a prosperous man. He was in the house of his master. He wasn't out back in some slave house, but he was living with his master in the house. And his master saw that the Lord was with him. He could see it. That the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found, let's see, in verse 4, and Joseph found grace in his sight, but he sloughed off at work because of a bad rap he'd received being sold as a slave in Egypt because he had done nothing wrong. Is that the way it reads? Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. So here was Joseph. He'd been given a bad rap. His brothers hated him. They sold him. He was hundreds of miles away from home. And what did he do? All dejected and just, I'm not going to serve this man. Joseph found grace in his sight and he served him. And he made him overseer of his house. And all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass that as he made him overseer of his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. Everything that was going on with Potiphar, the Lord blessed it. And Potiphar knew it. But it says, Joseph found grace in his sight and he served him. I'm reminded of Ephesians 6, verse 5. Servants, be obedient. And I don't know what Joseph knew, but maybe he didn't have a verse to guide him. He just did it. Amazing, isn't it? The rock solid faith of this young man. But in Ephesians 6, verse 5, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart. Oh, maybe you've got a bad rap, like Joseph. Oh, I'm not going to serve. No. Be obedient to them that are your masters. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service, as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good anything any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether it be bond or free. Whether you're a slave or you're free, and you do good, God's going to pay you back. Do good as to the Lord. Serve your master. Well, the Lord blessed Potiphar's house. And you might say, I might say, in a figure, you know, Potiphar handed over operations to Joseph. You know, he just did everything for Potiphar. Kind of kidding, but you know, you might picture Potiphar just sitting back in a lounge chair with a glass of tea, and Joseph's got it handled. He's got it all handled. And Potiphar didn't know what he had in the house. Joseph worked for him. Left all that he had in Joseph's hand, verse 6, and he knew not all that he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored, handsome young man. So the Lord blessed Joseph, and he put him over all that Potiphar had. Well, here in this next point in our study, in chapter 39, Joseph is tempted by Potiphar's wife. So, you know, Satan makes a move. Well, it didn't get anywhere with selling him into Egypt. Well, now Satan's going to make another move, but it's still not checkmate, as we'll see. Potiphar's wife tempts him. And it came to pass in verse 7, after these things, that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph and said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master was not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he has to my hand. There is none greater in his house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. And, let's see, because you're his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So he's trying to reason with the lady. Ma'am, you know, Potiphar trusts me. He's handed over everything to me. I can't do this great wickedness and sin against God. You know, obviously it'd be wrong against her, it'd be wrong against him, against Potiphar, and against God. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and verse 18, Paul tells us, flee fornication, for every sin that a man doeth is without the body, but he that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body. But here it was important to Joseph. He said, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Remember again, this rock-solid faith. Here he is, hundreds of miles from home, sold. Brothers hated him. He doesn't belong here. He doesn't deserve what he's getting, being tempted. Well, I'm reminded again also of Psalm 51, verse 4, David's thought after he had sinned with Bathsheba. And he said, against thee, thee only, have I sinned and done this evil. That was Joseph's mindset. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So he's reasoning with her. Potiphar, trust me. He's got everything in my hands. I can't do this, ma'am. Well, she doesn't stop, goes on again. Satan makes another move, and still not checkmate. Came to pass in verse 10, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that, so here Joseph was, he's working in the house. Remember, he's living here. He's serving Potiphar, living in his house, but no one else is around. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand, and he fled and got him out. And it came to pass when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand, standing there with it in her hand, and he was fled forth, that she called unto the men of the house and spake unto them, saying, "See, he hath brought this Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came unto me and to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice." I guess maybe since there was no one else around at that point in time, she could say that. You know, I cried out, and no, you know, so she'd called the men. She cried out, and he came to mock me. And it came to pass when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid his garment by her until her Lord came again. Remember 1 Corinthians 6, verse 18, and the instruction that Paul gives us, flee fornication. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body. Well, Joseph did that. He ran. Sometimes that may be the best thing to do, and maybe the only thing we might be able to do is flee the sin. So she laid the garment beside her until his Lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, "That Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass when his master heard the words of his wife," what did he do? He didn't care, didn't believe it, no. When he heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, "After this manner did the servant to me, that his wrath was kindled." So he was on fire, and Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. You know, I picture maybe here's the king and the dungeon, and you know, maybe someone conspires against the king. Well, he throws him into the king's dungeon. Well, here Joseph is thrown into the king's prison. He's angry, throws him into the king's prison. But the Lord was with Joseph. Remember that statement we read earlier in Acts chapter 7, verses 9 and 10. The patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God was with him and delivered him out of all his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom. You know, move after move that Satan is making sells him into Egypt. Well, Joseph's rock solid in his faith, and the Lord's with him. Potiphar's wife tempts him. Well, Joseph is rock solid in his faith, and God is with him. Throws him into prison. He's rock solid in his faith, and God is with him. God was with him and delivered him out of all his afflictions, gave him favor and wisdom. Well, in verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. You know, I don't know, again, going back to that psalm, you know, that he hurt his feet in the fetters or in the stocks. His feet were hurt in the fetters. You know, again, I don't know whether it was with the Ishmaelites or maybe here in prison. But the Lord showed him mercy, gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And notice again, the same kind of thing that happened with Potiphar happens with the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. So he's responsible for these felons or whatever. You know, anything that they're doing, well, he's going to get the rap for it. He's responsible for what they do. The keeper of the prison handed over operations to Joseph, just like Potiphar handed over operations of his own house to Joseph. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him. And that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. Potiphar knew that the Lord made it prosper. Here, the keeper of the prison, here it says that the Lord made it to prosper. Don't forget that God is with Joseph, and he prospers him. So Satan, again, move after move that Satan is throwing against Joseph. His brothers hate him. He's sold into Egypt. He's tempted, thrown into prison. Joseph is rock solid in his faith, and God is with him. Remember again in Colossians 3, another passage. We read Ephesians 6 earlier. Servants, so you've got a bad rap. Oh, I'm just going to slough off. I don't deserve what I've got. This shouldn't be happening to me. Why is it happening? God do that against me? God do that to me? Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. Joseph feared God, did he not? And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance. Again, whether you're slave or free, if you do good, God's going to repay you. You're serving the Lord, you'll receive of the Lord the reward of the inheritance. For you serve the Lord Christ. But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done, and there is no respect of persons with God. So here's Joseph. He's hated by his brothers, sold into Egypt, tempted by Potiphar's wife, cast into prison, but rock solid faith. We'll look at some applications in just a moment, but any comments or questions that you have on chapters 37 or 39? Right. It's interesting, isn't it, that, it looks, to me, it's obvious he believed him. His wrath was kindled, and he threw him into the, he gave God the credit up to the point where his wife lied against him. Well, let's look at some applications. The Lord has his hand in this world, and we're not alone. I'm reminded of that song that we sing, that hymn that we sing, Lord, I believe. Lord, I believe. Yes, I believe. I cannot doubt or be deceived. The eye that sees each sparrow fall, his unseen hand is in it all. We believe that, don't we? We sing that. The Lord's hand is in it all. I believe we see that God's hand in his word. This is the Genesis account gives us an example, an illustration, and a window into the Lord's operation behind the scenes. Jacob and the other 11 patriarchs didn't know what was going on. And I don't know at what point Joseph saw it. I take it later he did see it because of the statements that he makes to his brothers. But the Lord's hand is in it all. In Genesis 45 and verse 7 and 8, God sent me before you to preserve for you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So God was calling for a famine. We read there, I've already forgotten the psalm now, but God was calling for a famine, and he sent ahead Joseph. God sent me. You know, here's sin after sin after sin after sin by his brothers. Their hatred, they can't even speak peaceably, they sell him and so on. But no, you didn't do it. God sent me. God sent me to preserve life. In Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, all things work together for good to them that love God. It doesn't say that all things are good. You know, they hurt Joseph's feet in the stocks. All things are not good. We see that. Death, disease, and whatever. All things aren't good, but all things work together for good. They work together for good for Joseph, and they'll work together for good for us. God's hand is in this world. We've got to believe it. We sing it. Romans 8, verse 28, all things work together for good. Hebrews 13, verses 5 and 6, let your conversation, your way of life, be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have, for he hath said, I'll never leave you nor forsake you, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear what man shall do to me. The Lord has his hand in this world. We're not alone. One good lesson we need to remember from the story of Joseph. We see this example, this illustration, this window into God's operation behind the scenes. And we've got to understand that God will be with us. A second lesson, God's will may be that we suffer. According to the record we have, remember Joseph's rock solid, steady faith through the ups and downs of life. We may suffer. Joseph suffered, but he was steady in his faith. In Matthew 5, verses 10 through 12, blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. We may suffer. Remember Joseph. Blessed are they who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, Blessed are you when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad. No, don't be dejected and slough off and just forget your faith in God. Joseph didn't, and we shouldn't. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 15 to 17. Sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and be ready always to give an answer. And then down in verse 7, it is better if the will of God be so that you suffer for well-doing than for evil-doing. We'll suffer. All who live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. 2 Timothy 3, verse 12. And just in general, John 16, verse 33, Jesus said to his disciples, these things have I spoken unto you, that in me you might have peace. In the world you shall have tribulation. This isn't heaven. It's not going to be heaven. In the world we have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. God's will may be that we suffer. Joseph suffered. They hurt his feet in the stocks. But he was rock solid in his faith, and we can be rock solid in our faith, even though we suffer. Consider also the grave consequences of hatred. Again, as I mentioned, there may be 1,000 examples of choice of sin and problems that we could look at, but I want to point out Joseph's brother's choice to hate. Consider the grave consequences of hatred. Consider that love and hatred can be described as something that is in, not only in action, but also as well as in feeling. In 1 John chapter 3 and verse 15, whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. That's pretty bad, isn't it? For God to look down, you hate your brother, you're a murderer. And no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. Pretty grave to hate, isn't it? But then he says, my little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and truth. So love is not only in feeling, but it's also in action. And we see that in 1 Corinthians 13. Both the internal motive and the external actions of love are necessary. Good deeds without love profit nothing. If I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it doesn't profit me anything. So good deeds without that internal motive, it doesn't do any good. But true love is the heart plus the action. For example, in 1 Corinthians 13, love is kind. So love is not just in feeling. Oh, we ought to love in feeling. In other words, we ought to have that good motive of heart toward people. But we ought to love indeed and in truth. True love is heart plus action. What do you think? If you're doing actions that are the very opposite of 1 Corinthians 13, what would that be? You're not kind. You're not long-suffering. We can show love in action, and we can show hatred in action. Consider the grave consequences of hatred. And lastly, beware of envy. Joseph's brothers moved with envy, sold Joseph. Pilate knew that for envy they delivered Jesus up. The Jews envied Paul and blasphemed. As Christians, we need to leave envy behind. Titus 3 and verse 3. At one time, we were once, one of the things he says there, was living in envy. But we leave that behind. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your comments.